program of freedom, justice, and equality and mercy, where none will be denied because his skin is black, and none favored because his eyes are blue. Let me say here that we have a right to be jubilant. We have put Jimmy Carter in the White House, the 39th President of the United States. How odd, how strange. Jimmy Carter from Plains, Georgia, somewhat comparable to a Palestinian Jew born in Bethlehem of Judea, an obscure town in the south of Palestine. Jimmy Carter, born in the southern part of the United States, installed the nation by securing 297 electoral votes to become president of the nation on January 20, 1977. Not only from the South, but from Georgia, the state that has legislated in its constitution unjust laws to keep Negroes down, a state that has encouraged lynching, concurred in by the ministers of Christ God, openly flaunted the separate but equal doctrine in education and trade. That state has given America Jim O'Connor, a born-again Christian, Sunday school teacher in a small Baptist church, and Andy Young, a black preacher. It may be that God has called Jimmy Carter the prophet politician, and Young and other political leaders appoint by Carter to lead America closer to the ideas entrenched in a constitution which our founding father did not have black men in mind, only theoretical, to further us on our way toward democracy for which Negroes fought even when they were slaves and segregated. We can thank God that black Americans had a decisive hand in electing Mr. Carter. It has been estimated that 70% of the registered Negroes voted, and 95% of all Negroes voted for Carter. Carter beat Ford heavily in electoral votes, but only by 200 million in popular votes. If the scales had been reversed, it can be said that Ford would have been elected. A great responsibility rests upon the South, black people, and President Carter. We must show the world that the South is new, that President-elect is new, that from this leadership, a nation will arise that will realize the dream with liberty and justice for all men. Black and white, Jew and Gentile, red men, brown men, yellow men, African and European, Asiatic and South American. Let me close with two challenging songs. America the Beautiful. America, America, God shed his grace on thee. Crown thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea. America, America, God mend thine every flaw. Confirm thy soul in self-control, thy liberty in law. America, America, may God thy goal refine, till all success be noblest and every gain divine. America, America, God shed his grace on thee, and crown thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea. In closing, let us listen to the words of James Weldon Johnson. Lift every voice and sing. Where the white gleam of our bright star is cast, God of our weary years, God of our solid tears, thou who hast brought us thus far on the way, thou who hast by the might led us into the light, keep us forever in the path we pray, lest our feet stray from the places, our God, where we meet thee, lest our hearts drunk with the wine of the world we forget thee, shattered beneath thy hand, may we forever stand true to our God, true to our native land, so that this nation under God may not perish from the earth.
Statement and the paradoxes that we know each in our lives. I keep thinking of the words of Du Bois about that war that goes on within us, black man and white society. Larry Murphy is going to give us a report on the condition of Dr. Mays, and after that we can have some brief and there'll be some announcements by Major Jones. And at the end of this, the steering committee will meet, and Evans Caulfield will dismiss us.
Just briefly, the doctor who I guess was on duty here or happened to be here approached me outside, and he said that Dr. May's personal physician was with him, and after some considerable coaxing, they managed to persuade him to allow them to ride him to the hospital in the ambulance. And so that is where I guess where they are now. I don't know how they're already there. He said that there was nothing serious from all indications, that whatever it was, that something minor, that was pretty much okay, and that he would probably be home from the hospital this evening. But they didn't want to, I guess, give him the extra special attention of taking him to the hospital for more thorough examination, and that's where he is. Maybe home this evening, but hopefully he will be. Hopefully won't find anything more than just you know, a temporary stress situation.
Jim Costin and myself got together, he being the person responsible as the host on campus, and we did clear the gambling facility at 63. He apprised me sometime this evening that it may well be that we would want to meet in smaller groups. And if such is the case, I have checked with the cashier hostess at the Willis J. King facility owned by Gammon, and that is open. I was under the impression that the Atlanta University, I knew that they had sold up a part of the building, but they are only occupying the living space and are not occupying any of the conference facilities. So we do have ample smaller rooms at Willis King rather than at the 653 main Gammon Theological Seminary building. I would want us to clarify which we would rather have so that I could notify the superintendent of the building grounds, and they can help us facilitate getting ready.
Willis
J. King. This is what I'm asking, whether or not you want the Willis J. King. The Willis J. King can be the one meeting place tomorrow, that we can do it all there.
Say, maybe that's all right for a speech, but you can't smoke in your chapel, you can't really relax. We want to respect that. If you have another speech that's going to be made, that would be fine, but I think that we would need a more relaxing atmosphere for us.
No, he's saying we can do all of it. We have
one room that's larger.
We have a multi-purpose room that can be set up. Well, I will call.
She said, that's at 9 o'clock session.
That's at 9 o'clock, then you will be there all day. Now, I have some responsibilities as member of the Clark College Board of Trustees as the nominator, chairman nominator. So I will be out a part of the morning. But the superintendent of Buildings and Grounds, and that is a very beautiful I would want you to use up all the facilities. A subsequent invitation, if you want to have
the Southern Party over there.
We would be very happy to house that at Willis King if you come back. If you want to come back, I would write off as much housing as we have for those persons who want to live at Willis King. It is quite comfortable at Willis King. The only thing you can't do at Willis King, you can't engage in some of the things
Watch out.
No.
Watch out.
Back to the hotel.
Thank you, Major. Tomorrow morning, we remind you that at breakfast is at 8 o'clock at the RTC dining hall for those of us who are eating over there, and our morning session begins at 9. I talked with Gardner the other day, so he is expected to be here for our preliminary session. We'll have a brief discussion following that, and I'm going over this because I got the impression that some of you did not bring the copies of the program which we sent to you. At 10:45, a coffee break, then the second session begins at 11, and we will have a discussion of the books in terms of the theme that we have chosen for this year's session. Now, the one change, tomorrow afternoon, at the third session, immediately following lunch, before we break up into the small group sectional meetings, we will have our business meeting. So we are asking those committees which have to make reports at that business meeting to do that, to be prepared to do that, which would mean that you either have to meet tonight or tomorrow morning. So I'm going to have to take the liberty of appointing some of those persons now so that you will know what you'll have to do tomorrow. The nominating committee, Shelby Rooks, Boykin Sanders, Harold Johnson, Tom Hoyt, and Charles Brown.
Jackson.
Harold Jackson. Right. And the steering committee tonight is going to meet immediately following this session, and we will have to take up the issue of the meeting place for next year and for the next 2 years. You know, what we have been doing is trying to decide on 3 years of meetings at one time, so we'll know exactly where we are going. Because of the change with the Jamaica situation, that has shifted somewhat the projections that we have. And because we did not have anyone in San Francisco, which was one of the designated places for next year, we are going to reconsider that tonight. And also, those of you who have ideas about a program for next year, the steering committee will again, as they did this year, be in touch with you at this time. Thank you very much for tonight, and we'll see you. Shelby Rooks.
Heard.
Ed?
You mentioned that the business meeting would be held before we make break into the small group sectional meeting.
Immediately following lunch, we will go into the business meeting.
Now, will that be at 2 o'clock or earlier?
Well, hopefully we can come out of lunch by 1:30 and go into the business meeting, so that it shouldn't take longer than an hour, and we'll go into the small group sections at 2:30.
Doesn't mean no Friday evening session?
No, it does mean that we would then hopefully conclude with them.
Yes.
That's what it would mean, right? Since some people do have reservations before 7 o'clock, and we wanted as many people as possible to be in our business session.
Yes. Yeah.
Any other questions? We will have the small meetings following our business session after that, so hopefully at 2:30. We need the larger room in the morning. We need a larger room for the session after lunch for our business meeting. And then we need 5 small rooms for the sessions. All right, are there any other questions? Yes, John?
Since we're going to be at ITC all day tomorrow about leaving, is there some arrangement we can make for bringing our bags?
The bags can be brought to Willis King, and just see the superintendent of buildings around for the cashier hostess, and they have a room that's good to be.
And check out time here tomorrow. It is 1 o'clock, unless you make requests for a later time.
Let us all stand. I'll take just a moment of silence to gather up the evening. We are thankful, our Father, for the privilege of loving thee with our soul itself. Gracious for those who have
taught us and who have directed the institutions in which we have been privileged to study. As they continue to share the fruits of their living, their faith with us, our grace in your healing, and your names, and all who need thy special presence. And as he has left just for the moment, the fruits of his own scholarly labors with us, and we've been able to enjoy them, may we be challenged to open our ears, bring our responsible criticism, to continue in that spirit for the remainder of this conference and for the challenges to come. Be with us in the night, rise with us in the morning.
I think that he needs the theological depth to see that story today, as it is being appropriated as a form of doing theology, particularly as in the context of it, is not only limited to more illustration-like, but it is focusing upon the very form of how God comes to us. God comes to us in such a way that we can get involved, often so that when a question is asked of him, if you have the story upon it, acceptance of Christ, you end up asking the personal story. I think that's a very important dimension to add to your concept of story. The books, the sermons themselves, demonstrate these forms. To me, one of the most meaningful, I hope you don't think it's grandstanding, is one by the chairman of our committee, who in the preaching of the gospel, not only speaks prophetically against racism, but he captures it in story form, and he does it rhythmically. More about that later.
Yeah, I haven't heard what was been said before. I thought I would utilize this time to speak on the point of Christian origins in pointing out certain phenomena or patterns of material consideration rather than in dealing with the usual review approach. And I'm not particularly interested in speaking, what I'm trying to say is not, I'm not particularly interested in speaking about what I saw, that is in terms of word for word, what's there, but in terms of the patterns in the literature, which in a sense makes the whole concept of liberation very confusing in the term, and doing this from a New Testament point of view. My concern has to do with the whole concept of preaching or witnessing for God as defined and fleshed out in these materials and the particular slant which has developed for Africans in the diaspora context in which we find ourselves. It has to do with the acculturated patterns within the black religious experience that show up in what I call typecasts or personality types, which in a sense represent the whole plurality of the black religious experience in America. We may especially enter the idea of what happens to a group of people in diaspora context or in exile when they are confronted with a new set of situations so dissimilar to their own, that is, with their cultural patterns in a totally different setting. Or what happens to Christian life. And even the keepers of culture, which these materials attribute to the black preachers, and peddlers of culture, when they meet and haggle and negotiate with the new that they confront, especially in contexts where the dominant or the victor controls the minority or victimized. And I think a whole lot of this tends to come up in not only in these books, but in the materials that we present for public inspection. This majority that I speak of, victimizing the minority, may not necessarily reflect a numerical dominance. And I speak particularly in the context of the New Testament world. And you can take your pick from Alexander the Great until Augustine. Or the obvious distinction of their superiority in military dominance, or the or institutional superiority versus drums and traditional life and tents. But the edge may very well be in the charms or the patterns of culture brought by the victor, which are in fact quite enticing or inviting to the victor. Such as, for example, in our own American context, I think it's very aesthetic, you know, in the light of preaching, to really have, I should say, in terms of our African culture, is to have real American flags in black churches. Or our icons as such are not particularly reflecting the dignity of our own being. This enticement to taste happens to the best, especially, of those who are victimized. And if you read Jewish religion and Jewish history, the Maccabean revolt is about those, the upper echelon of society, who taste, you know, I'll be all right if the Lord changed my name, not to my Hebrew name, but to my Hebrew. Now, let us now consider or briefly sketch certain phenomena of the New Testament world into which the Jews entered, and I think we can speak specifically of Jews because we belong to the Judeo-Christian tradition rather than some other groups such as in Babylon or in Egypt as such. And these situations might also show some parallel of our present crisis in the black community represented in the black preacher. How the Jews responded to diaspora experiences which say in some degree that the world itself is really cyclical. It has to do with that what we are experiencing in America is really Greco-Roman culture played over again, of how minority people as such relate to a majority context. What happens to priests and Levites and elders and even people, which may not be unrelated confusion encountered in these materials about preaching and the unclear notion of the meaning of liberation for us, which in my estimation, in some instances, could be very what we talk about as liberation is actual oppression, especially as it applies to what I call African innocence or a spirit-filled world or fullness of vitality. What happened then to those Jews that stayed at home as well as those who were in such places as Egypt, in Babylon, in Asia? A portion of those people said, "Let us forget Israel and let down our buckets in Babylon and in Egypt. Let us become merchants and peddlers and exploiters like our Hellenistic masters. Let us join the army and the administration of evil." that was another, those Donatists in North Africa didn't do that. Another group said, let us occasionally remember Zion on the feast days. Otherwise, let us fill the synagogue with the charms of our masters. Let us ask even our master Ptolemy Philadelphus to have our Bible translated into our own language, which is Greek, so we can truly worship our God. Another group said, let us attach ourselves to real learning experience and become members of the learned society. We will show them in propagandistic ways that we are the most ancient of people, that Zeus and Yahweh or Dionysus are actually the same. Thus we have Josephus and Philo and a whole host of Hellenistic Jewish authors peddling the culture, you know, in the streets of Hellenism, which in a sense, Christian religion is a city religion. Another response was those of what we have called the most radical type. We will pretend ourselves as revolutionists, bringing together body and soul as our fathers were in the good old days of innocent Africa. But yet the pattern of Greek chum causes them to think of steel and imperfect earth and a perfect heaven. So therefore you get this eschatology thing about way over yonder. You know, then we have Pharisees and Essenes. Spiritually, there were the inner light folk. You know, the camp that envisioned the idea of a splitting of the environment, where you had, for instance, a remnant saved and a remnant lost. Therefore, there is no longer Sheol, but the whole idea of heaven and earth, and some will go to heaven and some will hell. That's the thing that is divided by community still. More could be said, but these phenomena relate to our experiences here in America, and particularly in these books. We find in these materials, that is the four books that I have read, personality types of African Americans. Personality types of what Mitchell has called the extended family. The material speaks of plurality, which shows the mess we are in. I am certain if any of the material or personality types, if any of the material or personality types really want to recover African innocence with the understanding that religion is not white civilization in total, but that religion is best when it is culturally conditioned and culturally expressed and comments on experience. We've got to realize that the very language of religion itself, that is what I see in these sermons, is a language of the city, the language of the Hellenists, and not the people of the bush. The material tends to show the desire of patchwork as well as the desire of the Hellenized Jew to improve on the Hellenistic way, and city religion is a missionary religion. I don't think that Africans were in the business of mission, you know, missionary religion. Thus, the admonition of the material range from a clear objective to save the unsaved and give them a new Hellenistic pattern of thought born out of the city religion to that of going back to something, that is, to roots which are really not defined. Or worse still, they cannot be felt or taste, smell, or seen. The point here is that liberation or African innocence or vitality has not been defined or agreed upon among us preachers. We have to stop, I think, speaking of black preaching or a black community, because I don't know what the gospel is. I want to really close by asking, in fact, you know, I'm searching for what is the gospel in the black community intended, what is it intended to do? I mean, what is it about? What are you trying to do? That is, you know, the question. We have to recognize the Hellenistic system has left an indelible mark, its laws and its tradition and its style upon us. And we may have to recognize that we are victims of European charm. Now, this is basically the situation I think that Mitchell, in a sense, tries to get to this matter, but we are living in a situation where we are victims of the folk who in Bush that have not been entered into the city of the civilized. We may have to go back and ask them to help us to smell and taste and feel and understand.
This side of the room is applauding, and then what is we do have time for some questions and rejoinders, and I think there are
I'm going to ask you about the romantic notion of the Bush. About innocence. Where might you not be daring? And I heard in the back of the Helen and all of that. In the 60s, the Roy Jones Barack, now named, wrote a book called Blues People. And he, because I mentioned the music, tries to make the distinction between music of the bush and music of the city, the Helenized culture. He looks at jazz, looks at blues. I guess my question is, how much of the bush is really bush in terms of the fact that all of our lives are permeated by various streams of culture, Hellenistic, Roman, Babylonian, Persian, Western European, etc. So, where would you help us draw the line there? Because I'm concerned that we're not over-romanticizing this bush versus city issue. And I guess I'm just raising the question. I really related to what you said, but I heard some other romanticism there. So we need some of that, I guess. But I'm concerned about that since you ended on it so strongly. You got so many amen. I want to mandate it and turn it around and ask you to look at that for us.
Well, I suppose we somehow or another respect the integrity of our people. And I think one of the ways that you get at this is to do a whole lot of reading in history. That is, I think that the publications coming out of Africa now, I think that there are some places in the United States, maybe in West Indies too, that you can sort of get at this. One of those places being Georgia, especially on the coast, and South Carolina. You know, the point is, I don't really, I have expressed the fact that we are victims of a system. And we have exploited this system, you know, for various means, as Jews did it long years ago. What I tried to do is basically indicate to you a particular problem, and that those Jews who really thought, even the Maccabees, who really thought that they were the ones who were the saviors of Israel, were at points themselves victims of this time. So I don't know, you know, exactly how we are going to, as such, turn this mess around. I know that it is there. We read it in our literature. Josephus, Philo, and all of these people, Jews, the scholars, as such, they were victims, and we are a missionary group of people. We've become a missionary group of people. When you go to church on Sunday, when I read these books, it seems to me that we are asking our people to do something better. But maybe our understanding, maybe our interpretation of what is progress, is totally wrong.
Are you saying that the Bush is the place to get at what the, is totally
I'm just
right?
saying, no, I'm not saying that either. I'm saying that the Bush people have not been victims of this thing that we're in. And I know, but let me speak particularly, in North Africa, there is the Donatist Church, as opposed to the Catholic Church, which is an arm of the government. And they saw the reason, one of the reasons for not participating in the society, that is, capitalism of the culture, is because they thought that that was a kingdom of evil. And Augustine's two cities, you see, two worlds, which develop out of that. And I am saying that that a lot of our people had a lot, the people did, in Paul, in 1 Corinthians, it says they sat down to eat and they jumped up to dance. This is a funny pattern.
You have questions in, but would you make your question as brief as possible so we can? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have a question. I think as you ended, mm-hmm. you raised a larger question, and it's the fact that we might go back and we might need to talk about a smile. I guess the only problem I have with the integrity of the volume is that we were edited by Young and Newborn is perhaps the need for you to specify, because I think that there were some, certainly not all, but there was some liberation cries in there that I could probably take as evidence that though they came through a text, that they would be open to somebody. I just felt that he was speaking primarily to the kind of hunger that Mitchell is articulating that needs to be spread. I didn't know what you were saying about the bodies.
Okay, when Mitchell talks, he talks about to sit where they sit. I don't know whether we know what sit where they sit is. That's what I'm not sure about, where they sit. And what is sitting, what does this mean in the context of the gospel? Is this, what is restore for us? Isn't the gospel having to do with healing and restore? When I read the book of Acts, religion is cultural, it's a cultural aspect. You know, it's not the same people that Paul and Barnabas are considered Zeus and Olympus, and that people shadow his feelings about it. You know, and that's all. So this is what I am saying. We may have to think conversion all over again. Yeah. That's what I'm restored. I think that Mitchell, you know, points out, and we have all these patterns and personality types in the community. We have the inner light people, like there's a world, a real world, and an imperfect world, and we're gonna go on to eschatology. And when people of the third world, at least I've heard some just recently, some people from Chile, you know, talking about what they mean by new heaven and new earth. But when we talk about new heaven and earth, we're talking about a pattern that is going to replace this one. But they're not talking about that at all. A new heaven and new earth is something different.
I know that there is the danger of making of the people in the bush or the people in the city sort of one thing in light of the very tradition within the one black tradition. But are you saying that those of us who are scholars or some of us would not be at home or do not feel an akin to worshiping and identifying with people both in the city and in the bush, and that when we write, we write from the standpoint of the city with no kind of understanding and no kind of identification with that underlying factor that cuts across both the bush with its varied strain and the city with its varied strains within the black tradition.
No, I'm not saying that. My question was, what happens to people when they're introduced to a new set of situations? What we call, is there any such thing as, for instance, like conversion or adhesion? I'm saying that we do, you know, kind of preserve, and sometimes we try to get it. But we have, you see, in other words, our emotions and all of that will not be determined by the bush. You see? And what we are doing is that we are adhering to a pattern that that is the way of the Hellenists, the Greek, the Greco-Roman charm. And I am seeking, you see, some, you know, from a New Testament perspective, I am seeking black integrity. And we have not learned that yet. I mean, we have not gotten that in our materials as I see it yet. I don't, in other words, I don't know. That's what I'm thinking. I'm seeking. I'm seeking. I know what we have. And it is the Hellenistic pattern.
Well, if you know what...
to me, about what you're saying in terms of how does it work itself out practically, I think it's one thing for me to for example, be pan-Africanist to a degree and think of myself as an African, but that's unreal. I'm not. We are not.
You're not African?
No. I don't think that you could defend, we can defend ourselves as being authentically an African people. In as much as I have grown up here, whether the text of my life and my origins happen to be African or not, I am still American. Now, given the fact that I have to speak the gospel to people who are like me, who have been corrupted, seduced, charmed, whatever word you want to use, that
it seems to me then that it's important not to recover the African innocency, but to ask the question, what does the gospel have to say in this situation? And are you suggesting for us that it has nothing to say, and that our major responsibility would be the recovery of our innocency in order that we may begin then to understand what the gospel has to say to us?
No, I am saying that liberation, as I see it, in black preaching, in black scholarship, or whatever, when we've talked about it, I after reading all these sermons and Bibles, I don't know what it is. Liberation is.
But you know the gospel is supposed to be concerned about liberation.
I know the gospel is supposed to be concerned about the good news, about now, for liberation, for
I mean,
me, it mean restore. It could mean restore.
I mean, you didn't get to understand the gospel from the bush. You got it in this Hellenized culture. Somehow it came through to you. Through somebody's preaching and teaching.
That's why you need histories. That's why you need history. If you don't get history, you're going to get
wrapped up in all this.
Maybe it's not a matter of not knowing what liberation is, but maybe seeing from the sermons that many of the people have interpreted in many different ways. But I certainly think that we know.
Could you go on parallel and say what you mean by there not being a theology?
The sermons. I'm taking it from the viewpoint of the teachings. Let's talk about Taylor and Mitchell. I when I read the material, I got inklings of asking questions or wanting to people to go on a little bit more about something. Let's say Taylor does what I call, I thought he was going to a theology preaching. He talks about love and he talks about heralds of faith. And I thought he was going to do some theological investigation with this, but it sort of just was said and then passed over. Nothing really deep. And
then
maybe not. I think that the purpose of what is important is how we train our preachers. Say now whether it comes out in the sermons exactly like that, that's not important because you can't get through all that. And many people say all that garbage, in a sermon. But certainly, a person who is learning how to preach ought to be fully in his theology of what he's talking about. Taylor gives some other ideas of when he talks about the watchman. He talks about he has to see, to look, and we get an idea. And then he talks about to sound the warning. And certainly there are theological implications for that when you talk about liberation. And I sort of wanted him to.
I think we recognize Henry Mitchell. And I think it should be said that this afternoon, this isn't the last time we will have an opportunity to talk about these issues. Yeah, Henry.
I just wanted to say that I resonated.
Yeah.
I simply wanted to say that I resonate very much with what Boykin has said, and right now I'm struggling with another book, and in the middle of it is this very issue that he raised. It was first brought to my attention in any way that really disturbed me by Howard Thurman, who was saying, in effect, that this whole business of classifying people as saved and lost, which is at the bottom of a tremendous amount of our whole activity as Christians and churches and preachers and teachers, is up for serious re-examination. And as one goes, as I have gone into African culture, certainly that's a category that hardly exists for various kinds of reasons. And this whole business of what we are doing in evangelism, I am seriously trying to work through, because precisely at this point, it seems to me, we are not liberated when we take the dive for the neat, white category of saved and lost.
Could I ask you a question?
Just a second, please. Jim needs to make an announcement.
For those of you who will be taking your...
Just a second, please. Jim is trying to make an announcement.
For those of you who will be taking your meals on campus, you go down to the main campus and to the very period right across from the library, roughly there, come the good, and you will find the dining room there. And it will be served at 12:45, and we need to be there about...
Thank you.